Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teen Scientist on WDIY. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, and doing our audio engineering tonight is James Ziprout. Here on the show, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the STEM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields from the local to the international levels. I was lucky enough to meet tonight's guest in the past at science research events, and now he's joining us over the phone all the way from Luxembourg. Welcome, Maxime. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thank you so much for taking the time to be here. It's amazing to speak with you again. Now, before we dive in, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Of course. So my name's Maxime Buck, and I'm currently 17 years old. I live in Luxembourg, which is a very small country in Europe, like between France, Germany, and Belgium. I'm not sure a lot of people know about this country back in America. And currently, I'm in the Lycée Michel Rodange in an American school system that would be around 11th grade.
Okay, perfect. I'm glad you translated that a little bit because I'm sure people would definitely be confused. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your research interests and specifically your most recent project and what exactly inspired it?
So the project I did last year was a VR game. It's called Marbles VR, and it's all about making a marble run. You will probably know like marble runs made out of plastic or like wood parts, which you put together to make like one big structure. And then the marbles just roll from the top to the finish. And I just made the exact same, but in a virtual environment using virtual reality.
And what exactly inspired that? Was that something you were interested in or had kind of hands-on experience with beforehand?
So one of my problems I wanted to address was the fact that after some time, when building a big structure, you won't have enough pieces. You'll run out of them. And buying new ones actually costs kind of a lot. So in a virtual world, you just have an infinite amount of them. And additionally, you don't need any resources to build them, so it also doesn't harm the environment as much.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of that aspect of unlimited resources and there's no limits to what you can build there. Did you have experience with game development beforehand, or was this the first time you kind of learned about it?
Actually, the year before, I competed in a game dev competition, and there I made my first 3D game. It hadn't any stuff to do with VR, but at home I had a VR headset. And after some time, I just asked myself, well, what if I could just like program a game for the VR? That would be amazing. And I actually did it.
And was this something that you taught to yourself, or did you take classes online, or did you learn it in school? How did you kind of educate yourself to create games like this?
So programming I learned in extracurriculum classes, which are called like Luxembourg Tech School. We learn about like fine tech, other new technologies, also electronics. But from the part of VR, I had to like teach everything myself. But there are a lot of resources online. You can find documentation, tutorials. You can really let your creativity speak in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. So I now want to circle back to your project that we initially started talking about. Did you do any kind of market analysis or kind of research beforehand on what was already available to kind of identify what you wanted to address with your project?
So exactly. The second problem was that after some market analysis, I detected that only around 1% were actually games using hand tracking. And hand tracking is a technology that allows the user to see a copy of its own real hands in the VR environment. And this is possible through the multiple cameras and sensors on the headset, which process the video and then give some positions as feedback.
And what exactly motivated you to combine hand tracking technology with VR for your game?
The main idea was to prove that hand tracking actually was better than controllers, because only 1% used hand tracking. And I believe that through my project, I proved that hand tracking makes the entire process way more immersive. You see your actual hands, they have the right length, you can touch stuff like you would in real life, and it doesn't feel like you have those big chunky controllers in your hand.
Yeah, definitely. So you really feel like you're in the game. It's more interactive. Could you elaborate on the different game modes that you designed for your puzzle game? Like, was there specific levels you could reach? How did that work?
The main idea was just to have like a sandbox mode, so you have an unlimited amount of pieces and you can build whatever you want just in real life. But then I also incorporated the idea of levels. So that would be the size of a puzzle game where you have a limited amount of pieces and you need to finish like a structure that is already started.
And then did you have specific like hand gestures or poses that the users have to do in order to work the game? Or like what kind of hand motions does a user have to use in order to move things around?
Yes, so there are no buttons on hands, right? So you can't just give inputs like, I don't know, take this object as it would work with controllers. So in my case, I designed the game. So the program checks if your hand does a certain pose. And it can check if a finger is like open, closed, or in mid-range. And this is detected with the angle of each knuckle and also a lot of coordinates that the program gives me about the entire hand tracking. And it take a gesture, for example, a thumbs up or just a peace sign and so on. And then I have some specific poses in my game which can do specific actions. For example, to pick up something, you just close your hand as you would in real life, but to create a marble, it's like a superhero position where you have superpowers. Kind of hard to explain, maybe like if you know Naruto when he does his blue power.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And would you say that there's a bit of a learning curve? Like it's difficult for people who are trying VR for the first time to learn those poses, or do you think it's pretty easy for people to pick up with them?
I've seen people try for first time with controllers and first time with hand tracking. And I think that hands is way faster to learn because it's your actual hands. So you're already like familiar with them. And controllers, you need to find out where the buttons are because you don't see the actual buttons when you're in VR. And once you know the pose and you use it sometimes, then you will remember it quite fast. Yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely understand that hand tracking has more advantages than using a remote control, but what were some of the limitations? Like I can imagine that made it a lot more challenging to design and develop. So how did that make the process a little more difficult and challenging for you as a developer?
Yeah, so there are a few aspects of this like challenging part. Of course, without the controller, there are no buttons. So there I used some gestures, but it's also less exact than a controller because controllers can be tracked way easily with infrared LEDs, but hands is through the camera and the algorithms that run to give the feedback. So you have to find the right gestures. And also, the hands can never overlap each other. Because if one hand is over the other, the actual cameras of the headset can't see the hidden hand. So you have to take this into account for the whole development.
All right, that definitely does make sense. And then I was reading about your project in some of the content that you sent me, and you discussed virtual grid play. Can you explain what exactly that means for our listeners who might be unfamiliar and how that contributed to the player experience?
When I started designing the whole idea, I immediately saw that this virtual grid would be necessary. What I mean by this is at the beginning, when you took a piece, you had to be very precise on the position you would put it, or else the ball might just not pass through it because of like a millimeter adjustment. And this would be really frustrating for the player because as the hand tracking isn't as exact, it would be even more than just being millimeter precise in real world. So I designed this grid, which is basically just tons of cubes stacked together, which are of course invisible for the user. But this allows the user to take the object, put it in the grid, and it will snap to the nearest position. As such, you never have to be precise. And I also added a hologram, which helps the user see where the piece will actually snap to.
Okay, and then what about spawners? What exactly are those, and what was the rationale between, you know, putting that in and enhancing the player's experience?
Well, there must be a way for the player to get those parts, right? And you cannot just like put tons of them on the ground. This would be a real mess. So I designed the spawner, which works like a hydraulic press. And you can just grab the hydraulic press and slam it down. And each time there will be a new piece appearing. And I could also make like more spawners, which give different pieces.
And then, how did you design the menu of your game in order to kind of organize everything and have an interactive system for the entire program?
Well, you have to differentiate between VR and just a normal laptop or a computer where you have your mouse, right? And then you can navigate the window and click on elements. In my case, I don't even have a controller. So how do I make sure the player can go through a menu, select a level, maybe I change settings? I did this with replacing the mouse with a big giant cannon. And when shooting the cannon, it's just like a mouse click on the laptop or a computer.
Okay, so that's a bit of a creative, fun twist on your end. How do you envision your game creating a more relaxive and immersive experience for players as compared to other very popular games that kids are using these days?
The first part was just aiming to prove that hand tracking was more immersive. But then to have a relaxing experience, I considered different aspects. So the first one was just satisfying sounds when stuff happened. So you would get the feedback, but also just music in the background and a completely stress-free gameplay. So there is no pressure during levels, no timers, and it's never competitive. So just pure stress relief.
And what's the background of your game? Like, how did you decide what you wanted the opening screen to be when players are using it?
So once you jump in the game, you're on a hovering platform that just flies in the sky. And in front of you, there's a table where you can where this the grid is just around the table. So you unfortunately won't be able to place stuff far away. You have some spawners in the background, and then on the other side, there's the menu with the giant cannon that helps you interact with the menu.
All right, and that sounds quite interesting. Now, lastly, I want to circle back. I know you touched on a little bit of the challenges that you encountered, but can you talk more specifically on how you overcame them and what were some of the solutions for the problems that you faced during testing?
So I had two main problems that came up while testing. One problem was sometimes while the player was trying to grab an object, he would move forward without wanting to. And this was the case because the gestures for moving and grabbing were interfering. To fix this, I had to separate different gestures for the left hand and for the right hand, because normally right-handed people would grab with the right hand. So I would assign specific gestures for specific hand, which would allow for these gestures not overlapping. And to make this possible in the settings, you can now change between right-handed and left-handed. The second problem was that the entire project is actually based on real gravity, because my game engine, which is Unity, is actually an accurate physics engine. So the marble, if there is not enough speed and it didn't drop from high enough, will just get stuck. And to fix this, I had to create a new object, the booster, which wouldn't work in real life, and just accelerate the ball in a direction. And this made a fun twist for levels where it actually adds a layer that isn't possible in the real world.
Wow, well, that does really sound interesting, and I appreciate how you kind of overcame each of those challenges. We do need to pause for a short break, but when we return, Maxime will continue discussing his project along with some lessons and advice he'd like to share with young listeners interested in virtual reality and game development. This is Raina Malhotra, and you're listening to Teen Scientist.
Unlimited possibilities, folk music from across the Atlantic to the Lehigh Valley. Songs from this country's roots to the songs of today.
Oh, baby, I'm getting ready.
she goes. The Carter family to Joan Baez, Patty Griffin to John Gorka. There's always a great variety on Unlimited Possibilities. Friday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY Allentown.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra. Joining us tonight is a guest all the way from Luxembourg, Maxime Buck. Diving right back into what we had just previously discussed about his project, Maxime, what future improvements and additional features do you envision being able to use and implement into your game?
Well, the first one would be a multiplayer functionality, where on one side, you could share your project with others, so they could actually try your model run. And another design aspect I want to address was maybe to make levels with change of gravity, so as if you would be on a different planet.
And how would you be able to do that? Is that like a change in the code? Like, how specifically would you approach those modifications?
The multiplayer modification is, I think, one of the hardest modifications you can do. If you do this modification in a later stage of development, but the change of gravity would be as easy as just changing a variable.
And are there other similar games or products in the market? Like, I know you mentioned there's only a small percentage of games that use hand tracking technology. Do you know specifically what those games are and how yours is different from them?
Well, there are some hand tracking games, but lately, like 1 year past my project, more and more are emerging. Also with the Vision Pro now only using hand tracking, the new Apple headset. But some games I know about is just one where you actually learn about hand tracking and there is a ton of experiments. I know that now a lot of games that had the controllers before, like poker games, card games, stuff like that, also implemented hand tracking now.
And how do you think that your game could potentially enhance certain skills in your players, like fine motor skills, for example? Do you think that's something that could potentially be an advantage or subtle benefit?
So while testing, some, like my grandparents tested, and also during open doors, some elderly people tested the game. And for those, it was more difficult to achieve certain gestures, but not only for elderly, or also sometimes people that just weren't as, let's say, flexible with their hands. And after some research, I actually found out that just training your hands to do certain stuff can enhance the player's fine motorist skills without doing difficult exercises, but just coordinating your fingers to do something. It's a task that not everyone is 100% capable of all the time. So it is sort of a training for that.
Yeah, so then I guess there's actually applications outside of just being entertaining. It could also be used as kind of something for physical therapy or just, as you mentioned, like elderly people making sure that their fine motor skills are staying sharp. So I think that's cool. What would you say was the most rewarding aspect of your puzzle game?
Well, during the entire development, it was always rewarding to see it move on and the aspects actually work. But for me, the most rewarding were just young people and just anyone that was trying my game and just completely got lost in it. They lost the tracking of time and they were spending up to an hour in my game without really noticing it. So it meant that they were really immersed in the game and that all of my goals had worked.
And how long did you dedicate to this project? Like, was this, I'm assuming this wasn't a small feat. So did this take you like many months or just a few weeks or up to a year? How long did this take you?
It took me from September to January to program the game. And then afterwards, of course, to do like papers, presentations and everything, you can count at least 2 months more.
And what was the timeline? Like, how did you spend those earlier months? And then what was kind of the end of your project dedicated towards? Like, how did you break it into different phases of game development?
To plan the journey, at the beginning, I was just like going head on in it. But fast, I saw that there were different aspects. There was 3D modeling, the programming. At first, of course, just the basic design of mechanics, but those need to be adjusted to, in the process. At the later stages, there were always more testing. And even after the competitions and so on, I adjusted all of the visuals, which is a task that takes a lot of time, but can make your project really stand out afterwards.
Definitely. And just more broadly, how do you think that VR technology can revolutionize the gaming industry?
My project is a game. And then you think, yeah, it's something unserious. It doesn't really matter in the real world, just for entertainment. But through my project and through hand tracking, you can actually make applications that are useful, like training mechanics or pilot training, which is already used, also army training. And all of those applications make it possible with less cost to train people to a specific task.
Yeah, definitely. So a more realistic experience, obviously, like you mentioned, less resources and more affordable for many people to try. So I think there's a lot of applications for VR technology beyond just entertainment. I now want to talk about you specifically and your plans for the future. Where do you see yourself in the coming years, and what would you like to work on as you go into college and your professional careers?
So right now I have 1 year left before college. And right now I'm just focusing on making new projects for new competitions. But I have no idea about what I want to study in college. My problem is I have so many interests that I don't know which one to pick, if it's going to be about programming or physics or mathematics. I've got no idea for now. So I can't tell you where I see myself in 10 years.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you being very honest and transparent, because I feel like there's a huge expectation on young people to know exactly what they want to do and where they want to be in their future. But I feel like it's also totally normal to be interested in many things and narrow it down to one specific interest as you go throughout different careers. So I appreciate your honesty with that question. As someone who's participated in a number of science events and competitions internationally, what would you say is the most interesting thing that you've seen or experienced at these events?
Well, coming from a country where there's already a lot of different nationalities combined, I think only about half of citizens are actual Luxembourger. And I just discovered that even more nationalities around the world are actually quite the same, even with their cultural differences, that through globalizations, I really feel more connected to different nations than I was before. Another aspect was really just the different projects. I could enumerate so many projects that were really interesting, and this just motivates me so much to keep on exploring, to keep on trying new things and doing new projects.
And do you remember any specific projects that you really thought were cool? Or like, do you remember seeing any student whose research really struck you?
Yes, I remember a project where they made a chessboard which could automatically move the pieces. So you could play a chess game online with an opponent that's on the other end of the world, but on an actual physical chessboard. And I remember that I had the actual same idea weeks before and was like asking about how could they move the pieces automatically and so on. And then at the ICEF, there was actually this project and I discovered how they did the entire thing.
I think I remember seeing that one too. I asked them to play and they said that there was a line of people that were trying to test it out. It was a really popular project. I remember that one. Do you remember how they ended up being able to move the pieces?
I think it was through magnets that were moving under the board.
Oh, that is really creative. I'd like to see something like that in the markets soon.
I was asking myself, how would some pieces move that have to move over some other pieces, or when there's other pieces around? And they actually did it quite simple. They just moved it on the diagonals where there was like so little space between pieces.
Yeah, that is an interesting problem. So they probably had to make it wide enough so that the pieces can move in between other pieces.
Yeah, now I remember the board was quite huge comparing to the pieces.
Yeah, that is a really cool project. I'm glad you brought that up. Now, just more generally, what is the most valuable lesson that you think that you've learned over your experience with science fairs and research in general?
I would say the most valuable lesson for me was always to be stubborn, to always dig until you have the solution or the information you need to go forward in your progress. Because right now, with the internet, there are so many documentations, you will find something if it isn't in a completely new research topic or a topic that's just completely unknown of. But even then, just be stubborn and continue until you find a solution, because that sometimes normally you should.
Absolutely. And kind of piggybacking off of that, with your stubborn mindset, was there any time that you were intimidated by a certain field of research that you were working in, or, you kind of were hesitant to go into something and then you didn't feel like you could do it?
Yes, this was the case in my current project right now, which is about robotics. And I had no idea about robotics or at first electronics. Electronics I eventually learned through school and through some other activities. But it was through CANSAT, that is a competition where you build a tiny satellite that fits into a can. And this is then shot with a rocket into the sky. And there I learned really everything about microcontrollers, etc., which then really gave me the confidence to make this robotics project now. And before, I really feared to even go into robotics.
All right, so as we start to wrap up, I have a last question for you. What is one piece of advice that you would give to other students who are also interested in pursuing virtual reality development or game design?
Well, it's really interdisciplinary topic. So on one side, this makes it very difficult, but on the other side, it makes it very interesting because you have to master different aspects like 3D modeling, texturing, programming, and just designing the mechanics. Each of these topics can also be undercategorized in so many topics, and I probably left some out, but that's why in game studios, there are so many different people that have so many different tasks. I know some that their task was to do one leg animation or something like this. So if you want to make a whole game by yourself, you have to dig in all of those categories, which, as I said before, it's really interesting, but it makes the whole process way harder, way bumpier. But once you get through it once, then the next time it will always go faster and faster.
Definitely. And I think our listeners would definitely appreciate that piece of advice. All right. Well, thank you, Maxime, for taking the time to be with us today. It's been so great to hear about your experiences and advice, and we can't wait to hear where your research takes you in the future.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in today on WDIY 88.1 FM. Check out WDIY.org for more great public radio. I'm Raina Malhotra, and I'll see you next time on Teen Scientist.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.